Convene.
Good morning. I'd like to convene the House Committee on Business and Labor. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 2211.
Mr. Chair and committee members, you heard this bill on February 27th. It's a bill that authorizes the director of DCBS to impose a civil penalty on a service company for workers' compensation claims processing violations. It specifies the director may impose only one penalty for each separate violation by an employer, an insurer, managed care organization, or service company. But there is a dash two amendment that is before you, and it clarifies the authority of the director to assess the penalty for deficiencies revealed in audits associated with claims processing violations. And it replaces the administrative term with service company. There's no revenue impact on the dash two, and there is a minimal fiscal impact.
Thank you. Maybe we could have a DCBS representative come up and just talk to us a little bit about this. I know these are worker comp bills, and I don't see Bill Cross in the audience.
Yeah, he's there. He's hiding in the shadows.
He could probably describe the amendment, but I think Jan gave us a little bit about it. If you could just give us a little bit and, you know, let us know where we are with MLAC on this particular bill.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Schultz. I'm the administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division, which is part of DCBS. The bill was, I think, well described by the committee administrator. From our perspective, the bill's permissive. It does not require the department to change any of our audit practices. It adds a penalty provision for us in terms of an additional party that we can penalize in terms of deficiencies that we find in annual audits that are that where we're looking at their claims processing performance. MLAC has reviewed the bill, Mr. Chair, and as well as the Dash 2 amendment, and has made a recommendation to you, a suggestion to support the legislation. And I'd be happy to answer any questions I can.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Representative Barton, would you like to make a motion on the Dash 2 amendment?
Chair Hovey, I move the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2211.
Representative Barton moves the Dash 2 amendment to House Bill 2211. Discussion? Any questions? Seeing none. Is there any objection to the adopting the amendment? Seeing none, the amendment's adopted. Mr. Schultz?
You might want to stick around.
Might as well just hang out for a few minutes. Representative Barton.
Chair Holby, I move House Bill 2211 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Barton moves House Bill 2211 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none. Matthew, can we have a vote?
He's in LeGrand.
Excused.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative
Evans?
Aye.
Representative Fagan?
Yes.
Representative Fagan?
Aye.
Representative Nuss?
Aye.
Representative Weidner?
Excused.
Vice Chair Martin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cameron?
Aye.
Chair Holdridge?
Aye. This bill 2211 receive the votes. It's passed. Volunteer to carry the bill?
Happy to carry workers' comp bill.
Weidner?
I'll carry one.
Just give them all the gym.
Clem?
Yeah. We'll have Representative Barton carry the bill for us. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2211. Open a work session on House Bill 2797.
Chair Holvey and committee members, this measure was heard February 27th. It requires subject employer to pay the first installment of a temporary disability compensation in the workers' compensation claim within 14 days after the employer has notice or knowledge of a claim or has notice or knowledge of the employee's disability, whichever is later. There's a proposed Dash 1 amendment that requires the subject employer to pay the first installment of the disability compensation in the workers' compensation claim within 14 days after the employer has notice or knowledge of the claim and has not notice or knowledge of the employee's disability if the medical provider authorizes a payment, and there is no revenue impact, there's no fiscal impact, and I'll point out that during the public hearing, there was a letter of opposition from the National Association of Mutual Insurance Companies to the original bill, but with the Dash 1 amendment, they've submitted a letter of support.
Thank you. Representative Barton.
Chair Hovey, I move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2797.
Representative Barton moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2797. Is there discussion? Any questions? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
Chair Hovey, I move House Bill 2797 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Barton moves House Bill 2797 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none, Matthew, can you have a roll call?
Representative Beretta?
Excused.
Representative
Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Eskimo?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Aye.
Representative Fagan?
Yes.
Representative Hurd?
Aye.
Representative Nose?
Aye.
Representative Weidner?
Excused.
Vice Chair Martin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kenemer?
Aye.
Chair Holder?
Aye. House Bill 2797, having received the votes, is passed. Carrier on this bill? Volunteers?
I'll take it.
Oh. Representative Doherty.
Representative Doherty. Whichever. Oh, she's the sponsor. Let her do it.
We'll close the work session on House Bill 2797. Open a work session on House Bill 3114.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this measure allows injured workers to file a workers' compensation claim within 1 year after the health benefit plan rejects a claim. Requires the health benefit plan to pay benefits in accordance with the terms, conditions, and benefits of the plan if the workers' compensation claim is denied. There's a proposed Dash 1 amendment, shortens to 90 days instead of 1 year for the time allowed for the injured worker to file their workers' compensation claim after a health benefit plan rejects a claim. There's no revenue impact, there's no fiscal impact.
Thank you. Representative Barton on the Dash 1.
Chair Hovey, I move the Dash 1 amendments adopted into House Bill 3114.
Representative Barton moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3114. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to adopting the Dash 1 amendment? Seeing none, amendment's adopted. Matthew, can we have a roll call? Make a motion first.
Chair Hovey, I move House Bill 3114 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barton moves House Bill 3114 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Now, is there any discussion?
Maybe we should, just because we're getting awfully businesslike.
Yeah. Mr. Schiltz, can you give us a little background? I know there was some concern about this bill and the use of the word claim repeatedly and confusing, and that caused a little bit of, maybe not confusion, but consternation for some. And I know that MLAC sort of went through that. Can you tell us a little bit about that and where was MLAC? I should ask you where MLAC was on the last bill, but let's have a little bit of your thoughts on this one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, John Schiltz, Administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division, for the record. And in regards to the last bill, MLAC did have a recommendation to you to support that bill.
Thanks.
In terms of HB 3114 and the issue about the use of the term claim, that's a very commonly used term, especially for the insurance in the insurance field and for the insurance division. It refers to something pretty specific in regards to workers' compensation. So the question came up, is the use of the same word being applied in both laws, is that going to create any real issues? That was raised here as well during our public hearing, and as both we and the insurance division testified, we believe we can address that issue during rulemaking to implement the bill. MLAC did review that pretty thoroughly with us. The issue for health benefit plans is that they need to have enough information to make a decision on the claim, and they have what they refer to as a clean claim process, where they may need to ask questions of the enrollee or the beneficiary submitting the claim. There's time frames for their activities in terms of posing the questions, as well as acting once they get the answers back from either the beneficiary or the health care provider. And so we were satisfied at the department, as well as Omar was satisfied, that this is something that can very easily be dealt with by rule. MLAC voted after review of the bill to support the bill and the Dash 1 amendment, and recommend to you to support it. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. I went through that pretty quick.
No, I think you did a good job. Are there questions? Not seeing any.
Motion is pending, I believe.
Yes.
So we have a motion to adopt the Dash 1 amendments.
I believe we've already adopted it.
We did adopt them already?
Move to the floor. It's pending.
Okay. Thanks for keeping track of this,
what
Vice Chair.
For.
I know it's your job. So we have a motion to move House Bill 3114 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there any other questions? Seeing none, Matthew, can we have a roll call?
Representative Beretta?
Excused.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative Fagan?
Yes.
Representative Hurd?
Aye.
Representative Dose?
Aye.
Representative Weiner?
Excused.
Vice Chair Martin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kenemer?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. House Bill 3114, having received the votes, is passed. And,
I can't remember what to do.
I'll be able to take it.
I think I'll carry this one. So we'll close the work session, House Bill 3114. Let's move on to open a work session on House Bill 3495.
Members. This measure provides for the employer and employee contributions to the pension program in the individual account program, the IAP, of the Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan, known as OPSERP, to first be made for new members for wages attributed to service performed for the first full pay period following the 6-month probationary period, without regard to when the wages are considered earned for other purposes. There are no amendments before you. You heard the measure March 1st. There's no revenue impact, and a fiscal statement has been issued, but there is no subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you, and I would assume that fiscal is to the PERS.
Yes, PERS would incur some cost for computer programming.
Okay. Representative Barton, a motion on...
goes directly to the floor, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. Ready to go.
Is there an amendment to
no
this?
No amendment.
No amendments.
Chair Holby, I move House Bill 3495 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barton moves House Bill 3495 as to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, Matthew, can we have a roll call, please?
Representative Beretta?
Excused.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative Fagan?
Yes.
Representative
Hurd? Aye.
Representative Nose?
Yes.
Representative Weiner?
Excused.
Vice Chair Barton?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kenemer?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. House Bill 3495, having received the votes, is passed. Carrier?
This was Representative Gomberg's bill.
Okay, we'll have Representative Gomberg carry the bill. With that, I'll close the work session. House Bill 3495. And let's go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 2350.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this measure updates and clarifies portions of the Bank Act and related statutes. Comes operative January 1, 2016, declares an emergency. There are two amendments before you today, a proposed Dash 1 amendment that requires insured institution or extranational institution to fee notice and pay fee within 30 days of establishing the Loan Production Office in Oregon, and it makes further updates and clarifying changes to the Bank Act. The Dash 3 amendment allows banking institution to establish and operate branches with notice to the Department of Consumer and Business Services, as opposed to filling out an application. Eliminates the $500 fee to the department when establishing a branch. There is no revenue impact on either amendment, and there's no fiscal impact on either amendment.
Representative Barton, a motion on the Dash 1.
Chair Hovey, I move the Dash 1 amendment into House Bill 2350.
Thank you. Representative Barton moves the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2350. We have discussion.
I have a question on the motion I just made.
Sir?
What is it? I remember the underlying bill, periodic update. It's very complicated. We went through it. I
okay.
remember. What exactly was the Dash 1 again, Jan? Can you?
Exactly what it was. Mr. Chair,
it was a pretty intricate piece of legislation.
It was, yeah. Very.
It is. The piece that I pulled out that was a significant change was requiring the institutions to file a notice and pay a fee within 30 days of establishing their loan production office. And then there are further technical changes to definitions, other changes, but we have representatives from the OBA here.
And so we would ask a representative of the OBA or representative.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I didn't.
No, that's quite all right. Got plenty of time. And maybe Mr. Tapman as well.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Tim Martinez here on behalf of the Oregon Bankers Association and the Independent Community Banks of Oregon. Representative Barton, that wasn't a fair question to your administrator this
time,
but we're happy to try to answer it. With me is Ken Sherman, longtime legal counsel for the OBA. You were right, Representative Barton. You know, this is kind of an update we've done every 15, 20 years. Because of the deadlines, you know, you have to get your drafts in, yeah. in August or September. The department, Mr. Tapman and Ken and others, worked on the bill literally up until maybe a week ago to get all the changes that they wanted. I want to thank the department, first of all, for their willingness to work with the Oregon Bankers Association and other bank lawyers on this update. I do think it's an improvement over the law. There aren't a lot, if any, and I'll let them speak to that, policy changes. It really is just modernizing the act. So with that, if you have questions, I know Mr. Sherman would be happy to answer them.
Sorry. Well, Mr. Tapman, just a question for you. So I imagine the division's gone through and looked at this particular amendment as closely as it did the original bill, and don't see anything that's out of the ordinary or cause of concern for their finances and securities.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, David Tapman for the record, Administrator for the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities. I'll just echo what Mr. Martinez said, that in fact our staff worked with Mr. Sherman to craft the amendment in the Dash 1s, and part of it was done for clarification. Your committee administrator pointed out, there's a lot of technical aspects to it. Some of it had to do with the naming responsibilities and the responsibilities for checking on consistency between names or inconsistencies or a use of a name or improperly. As you know, we charter the banks, much like Secretary of State charters corporations and LLCs within the state. And so our responsibility goes to make sure that names are not overlapping and so forth. We wanted some additional clarity around that, what our role was versus what the bank's role was. So that was much of what was driving our asking for the Dash 1 amendment. So yes, we are satisfied with the Dash 1s.
Thank you. Mr. Sherman, any comments? I got a question for you, but I want to see what your comment is first.
Well, I would just agree with Mr. Tim, and we work very closely with the division.
Could you introduce yourself for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I'm Ken Sherman, Jr. I'm counsel for the Oregon Bankers Association. We did work very closely with the representatives of the department in putting together these Dash 1 amendments. They're really almost totally technical in nature. I think the biggest issue is the one that Mr. Tamman just referred to, which was trying to make sure that all of the various provisions in the Act that pertain to the name that is used by a financial institution were consistent with each other and also consistent with the provisions in Chapters 60 and 65 and so forth on other business entities and their naming statutes. So that was the biggest change.
Thank you. Would it be fair to say that this particular piece of legislation is going to help the banking business in Oregon, providing liquidity to our economy?
Well, I certainly hope so. I think it's probably best seen as more of a meat and potatoes kind of bill that just makes it easier for the industry to function and for the department to do its job in regulating the industry. But all of that, if we have a good strong structure, certainly good things will follow.
Thank you. Sorry for the leading question.
That's all right.
So appreciate your answer. Appreciate the work you put on it. Before you leave, I know we have this under work session. We have a Dash 3 amendment we have a motion on the Dash 1. Let's go ahead and move forward with the Dash 1, I guess. We have a motion on the Dash 1 on the floor. Is there any objection to adopting the Dash 1 amendment? Seeing none, the Dash 1 is adopted. Jan, could you describe the Dash 3 amendment briefly?
I will. It allows banking institutions to establish and operate branches with notice to the department as opposed to providing an application to the department. It eliminates a $500 fee to the department when establishing a branch.
Thank you. And I'm not going to seek a motion on this at the moment, but did want to have a short discussion about it. I did recognize that this particular amendment is very similar to language that was put into the Credit Union Act, which is a Senate bill, but now in our committee as well. And we were anticipating adopting this with the assumption that this was, you know, copacetic. But evidently there is still some concern with the language, though it looks like it's almost identical to the language that's in the Credit Union Act. And so I'm kind of curious. I was anticipating moving that until just shortly ago, so I'm kind of curious what the discussion is about the Dash 3.
Mr. Holby, Representative Holby, excuse me, if you don't mind, I'd like to go first and just discuss where the agency is.
Correct. That's fine.
All right. Thank you. So, Chair Holby and members of the committee, again, David Tapman. The issue is not a straightforward matter for us in terms of we fully agree with the notion of parity between credit unions and banks, and I've told both the Oregon Bankers Association and went on the record in the Senate as saying we think it's appropriate for both sides to be treated the same in this area. The issue, though, is more complex, I think, for a couple of reasons with respect to banking. One, the amendments, the issue around branches is addressed in a single statute within the Credit Union Act. The Credit Union Act is a single chapter. The Banking Act is multiple chapters. There's a single chapter dedicated to branching in general. We're concerned that maybe we didn't get all the language just right, and we want to work on that a little bit more. There's some inconsistencies in there, and we haven't had time to address that. My concern has been all along we're running out of time. I don't like moving forward on something that's incomplete, that doesn't meet what all the parties want. Second of all, as I believe this body knows because I've mentioned this on this bill at a previous hearing, we're scheduling a task force to look at the entire issue of funding bank operations at the state. So our program to regulate banking is going to be reviewed both from a funding perspective as well as the substance perspective of how we engage in that. That will start May 1. One of the issues we've been asked to look at is our entire funding operation. Currently, most of our funding comes from an assessment that's done every year. It's based on the size of the bank. We think that's the right model. We're not at a full agreement as to the amounts yet, but we're, I think, in agreement there. However, we've been asked to retain as a possibility looking at alternative methods for funding our program. One of those alternative methods is that there is a fee for virtually everything a bank asks of our agency to do. Other states use that as their model. So, for instance, the state of Hawaii charges $5,000 for a branch application. And in part, that's done for operational costs. Obviously, it exceeds the cost of what that particular activity is. We don't want to take that off the table, and I think it would be inconsistent if we're going to look at that as an option at the same time to take one of these tools available to us for the funding. That was our primary hesitation. My goal is to ensure that there is equity, and I've pledged to do that. My hope was that we could get this task force underway, and then in the Senate, should this bill pass, address these issues in the Senate and give us more time to craft it a little more carefully and make sure we meet all our needs. One of the thoughts I've got is that we'll be further along that task force before it gets to the Senate at a work session. So I think we buy ourselves 30, 45 days, I hope, to get our part done that we could then come forward on the amendment. Understand there's a need for, I believe there's a need for consistency. I've pledged that, so I could appreciate this body wanting to make sure there's a consistency between credit unions and banks. I believe we can get there on the Senate if we delay, but I'll defer to this this body.
Thank you. Other comments from?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Tim Martinez, again with the Oregon Bankers Association and the Independent Community Banks of Oregon. First of all, I'd like to thank the Vice Chair, Representative Kennemer, for having the Dash 3 amendments adopted, and also the Chair, who I think just a few minutes ago was ready to adopt or seek adoption of the amendment by the committee, so we do appreciate that. There was a conversation late yesterday afternoon between Mr. Tapman and my boss, Linda Navarro, who is the president of the Oregon Bankers Association. And Mr. Tapman asked us to wait on that amendment and work on it and get it in the Senate and then have it come back here for concurrence for your side to look at it and make sure you're comfortable with it. So with that and Mr. Tapman's comments, we would request that you not pass the amendment today, but we will be very careful and hopeful that the department will work with us and get something that is agreeable to both sides.
Thank you for your patience.
Any other comments, questions? I just have one for Mr. Tapman, I suppose, does the discussion about, you know, this particular amendment and, you know, the other elements, I understanding there's other statutes and other laws that impact banks that perhaps don't impact the credit unions, but this discussion and language as it's developed for the banks, do you think it will potentially require changes to the credit union piece of legislation, the Senate bill that's in our committee? Would you anticipate that there might need to be a change to that to ensure that there's a bit of equity in the consideration of branching?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, no, I don't. In fact, one of the things I value about the credit union bill is it does not have an emergency clause, so it wouldn't kick in until the start of the next year. That's something I'd like to see here as well, so that we do have time to make sure we get where we want to be. Because of the emergency clause, this could start even sooner rather than the credit union one. So if anything, I'm looking for that same level of parity in terms of when the application or implementation of the bills would take effect. So no, I don't see anything that you would need to worry about in terms of the credit union bill. I don't anticipate anything but a very similar and parallel set of languages between the two bills.
All right, thank you. That helps clear up a little bit in my mind. So I appreciate all your work on that, and I appreciate you being here to make sure we did this right. I believe we've adopted the Dash 1 amendment, and we're not going to move the Dash 3.
Should we make a motion on the floor?
Representative Barton, a motion to the floor.
Chair Holvey, I move House Bill 2350 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barton moves House Bill 2350 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none. Matthew, a roll call vote, please.
Representative Barreto?
He's excused.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yes, of course.
Representative
Megan? Yes.
Representative Turner?
Aye.
Representative
Hook
out on the
U.S. Aye.
Representative
Blythe? Get a hook out on
the U.S. Excused.
Vice Chair Barton?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Ketterman? Aye. Please off the stage.
Aye. House Bill 2350, having received the votes, is passed. And seems like a great vote, a great bill. Thank you for all your work. We'll have Representative Kinnamer carry this one.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, would Representative Doherty like to carry this bill?
Yes.
Okay, Representative Doherty will carry this bill. I forgot that he just directed the amendment.
That's the second time she's done that to you today.
I know, but it's her prerogative.
Who's keeping track of that second time?
Did I close the work session? I'll close the work session on House Bill 2350. And that leaves us wondering which one do we want to do here?
There's been a couple of times.
Why don't you announce that this one?
Yeah, I go back a long time.
Oh, I apologize if there's people here for House Bill 3164. We will be carrying that bill over to Wednesday, April 15th?
Yes.
And what else are we carrying? Anything else? It's 2764. You want to carry that one over, too?
Yeah, did you want to adopt the amendments or just hold the discussion?
I'll hold it. I'm hang on to that for right now. Let's open a work session on House Bill 2805.
No, it's not. 2805.
Chair Holden, committee members, this measure includes base pay of corrections employees of the five most populous cities as a comparable factor to be considered by an arbitrator when establishing the base pay for Department of Corrections employees. The committee has already adopted the Dash 1 amendment on March 2nd, and the Dash 1 replaces the five most populous cities with the five most populous counties that the arbitrator would look towards. There's no revenue impact. There is a fiscal statement issued on the Dash 1, and the committee would be adding a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
So it would be my intent to go ahead and move this bill to the Committee on Ways and Means. And the amendment's already been adopted.
That's correct.
So with that, Representative Barton, could I have a motion?
Chair Holvey, I move House Bill 2805 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to Ways and Means.
Representative Barton moves House Bill 2805 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Discussion? Seeing none, Matthew, can we have a vote?
Representative Barreto?
Excused.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Aye.
Representative Fagan?
Yes.
Representative
Kern? Aye.
Representative Mills?
Aye.
Representative
Weiner? Excused.
Vice Chair Barton?
Aye.
Vice Chair Ketterer?
Aye.
Chair Holden?
Pickett.
Aye.
I already did.
House Bill 2805, having received the votes, is passed to the Committee on Ways and Means. Close the work session on House Bill 2805. And we'll stand at ease for just a moment.
Nobody was home.
It's never balanced.
Whatever that was.
I'd like to reconvene the House Committee on Business and Labor. And I should have checked and make sure everybody was still here.
Pretty good.
Open a work session, House Bill 2803.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this measure you heard March 2nd, it requires the OLCC to state in an order approving a beverage container redemption center, the service that are to be provided by a redemption center, and the equivalent services provided by a dealer not participating in the center. And it's going to specify the convenience zones. There is the Dash 8 amendment before you. It's on OLIS. It came in yesterday. I will point out that we don't have the fiscal year revenue statement for it, but the Dash 8 grants the inspector and the investigators employed by OLCC the authority to inspect any space occupied by a dealer. It removes the requirement that OLCC inspect the premises of certain dealers, and instead it replaces with the requirement that the OLCC ensures compliance by those dealers. It requires OLCC, upon approving a redemption center, to state and provide the notice within 5 days to the dealers within either convenience zones that are not going to be served by or not participating in the redemption center. It changes the required time for dealers who sell fewer than 100,000 beverage containers in the previous year and who are claiming an exemption to file the report with the OLCC from 30 days to 60 days. And it specifies that the dealer who begins doing business in either convenience zone after the redemption center begins operating, that they have to notify OLCC regarding their participation at least 60 days prior to the date that the dealer begins doing business. Requires non-participating dealers to provide documentation of compliance with each requirement to OLCC. And finally, it authorizes OLCC to impose additional civil penalties of at least $200 for each day of non-compliance after a 60-day notice period for certain violations of the Act.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And I know we heard this bill quite a long time ago, February 23rd, I think, before we decided to have a little tweak to the bill. So could we have, maybe OLCC and somebody that wants to talk about the redemption bill come up? It's kind of we had a good description of the amendment, but maybe you can kind of review why. To the Dash 8 amendment. So it's gone back and forth a little bit since we last talked. So
it has, Chair Buckley and members of the committee, Amanda Dalton on behalf.
I look like Chair Buckley, but I'm Chair Holby.
I've been an ad.
Actually, I think that's a little bit of an insult. I hope he's listening.
Maybe Sean should have come up. on behalf of the Northwest Grocers Association, so thanks for your patience. You did direct us to work with OLCC. The reason there's a Dash 8 is we went back 4 or 5 times on this. If you'll remember, the intent of our goal was really to clarify notice to participating and non-participating retailers in terms of when the OLCC goes in and approves a bottle bill redemption center. And the second was to clarify OLCC's enforcement authority and set some pretty reasonable time frames around that to bring non-compliant retailers into compliance. So the Dash 8s that you have before you are fairly simple. We worked pretty hard to try and make sure that there would not be a fiscal to this bill. We removed any kind of requirements on OLCC to actually go in and inspect the retail facilities. We actually put the burden onto the retailer to almost prove up compliance. If that proof is not established within 60 days after issuance of a notice, then OLCC now has the authority to issue civil penalties, factored at $200 a day. We arrived at that number by averaging the average monthly cost of our retailers to participate in a compliant bottle bill redemption center.
Thank you, Chair Holby, members of the committee. My name, for the record, is Jesse Sweet. I'm a policy analyst with OLCC. I'm not sure that I have too much to add to Ms. Dalton's testimony. The Dash 8s are a product of the work that OLCC staff did with Ledge Council and with advocates in order to kind of streamline the bill and mitigate the administrative burden on the agency. I can't speak to the fiscal because it's not completed, but that should be ready by the time that the bill is back up before you on Wednesday, I believe.
Thank you. Questions, Representative Barton.
Thank you, Chair Holby. Mr. Sweet, so regarding the clarification of the authority, OLCC's authorities, I recall your testimony was that OLCC did not feel it had the authority to do enforcement on non-licensees. Is that, if I recall correctly? And I think Legislative Council clarified that OLCC did. I gather that the agency still feels that statutory clarification is necessary.
Thank you. Chair Holvey, Representative Barton. The issue with statutory authority is that our authority, existing authority to inspect, is located in Chapter 471, and it is specific to enforcement of liquor laws. So we have discussed this issue with LC. LC provided a memo on the point, and after those discussions, I think the sentiment for clarity was that the freestanding authority in the bill was needed.
And if I may, Chair Holvey and Vice Chair Barton, that is addressed in the amendment. Section 4, page 3, we mirrored the Chapter 471 language and applied it to the bottle bill, so there would be no future question about whether or not they had the authority to inspect non-liquor licensed retail facilities.
May I follow up? Actually, it's not a follow-up, it's a different question. Mr. Sweet,
it's a follow-up question.
Okay. I know you said that you cannot speak to the fiscal because it hasn't been completed. Having said that, I'm going to try and goad you into speaking to the fiscal anyway. If you have absolutely no idea because you are not involved in the preparation of the fiscal, that's no problem. But can you ballpark this? Does the agency anticipate a significant fiscal? Because that's of particular interest to me. I think this seems to me that the grocers kind of bent over backwards to try and mitigate that fiscal. Do you think it's going to work?
Thank you, Chair Holvey, Representative Barton. I can speak in general terms. Please. I have seen a draft fiscal, but I would like to emphasize mm-hmm. for the record that it is a draft.
Did it say confidential on it?
No, it's public record.
Sorry, go ahead.
I feel that the work that we have done was very helpful in mitigating any fiscal, but I do not believe that it will eliminate the fiscal entirely. So depending on your point of view, that may be a significant fiscal if you are thinking that any fiscal is significant, or it may be a small fiscal, which was, I think, how the agency would prefer to characterize it. One of the difficulties here is that the fiscal impact is going to be largely driven by how many of these redemption centers are proposed to be sited and where they are located. The compliance activity is going to be driven not just by the number of redemption centers, but the number of dealers that each redemption center serves. So if you're locating a redemption center in a more densely populated area, that's more likely to have a significant impact on the agency and the compliance work that's required of us. Because we don't know numbers or locations going forward into the next biennium, it makes these types of calculations a little bit challenging.
Mm-hmm. Make a comment following up, please.
A follow-up comment?
Yes, thank you. So, Mr. Sweet, first of all, thank you for that. I don't think that the existence of a fiscal will surprise or upset anyone. It's understandable. But I guess my question was a polite way of just giving you notice. I think, and I don't think I'm alone here, I think that it's an interest, this bill and this fiscal statement is of interest to us, and to the extent that fiscal comes back, I think, wildly disproportionate to this bill, that's something that I think will animate many of us up here, and I'm happy to chat with you or the agency as preparation of that goes on, see if I can be of any help. If you want to run numbers by, take a temperature check, I'm happy to do it. But thank you for your work on that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Representative Nose.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to know that the industry thinks that this bill and the legislation that you have now before us in the Dash 8s are going to correct the problem of grocery retailers that don't want to participate in the system, because I think that's what we talked about way back in February.
Yeah, Chair Holvey, Representative Nose, thank you for the question. We do. It's something that we've been asking for, and you heard from Joe Gilliam, our president, back in February, that the problem has been there's no real incentive for a retailer to get into compliance at this point. We gave you an example of one that took about a year and a half to come to the table. And when you have our retail members kind of funding the redemption centers to mm-hmm. comply with the law, it got a little frustrating and, in fairness, expensive for us. So we really feel this is a pretty simple change and will not add anything to what the OLCC is currently doing outside of a civil penalty at the very end of that letter, which we believe could be substantial if the retailer takes a long time to get into compliance.
Follow up. And do you think the civil penalty is high enough that this particular retailer that hasn't wanted to participate will think that that's maybe now we need to do this?
Chair Holvey, Representative Nose. We looked at the OLCC's general penalties, and they usually range from $50 to $500 a day. So we felt by kind of landing in the middle there that we were being fair and giving folks time to come to the table.
Thank you.
Representative Evans.
Thank you, Chair Holvey. I have two questions. The first question is for both of you, and it can be yes or no. And the second one is specifically for OLCC based on a constituent question. So the first question is this. This bill, I want to hear from both industry and agency, you both want this bill. Yes or no?
Representative Holvey, Chair Evans, yes.
Chair Evans?
God help us. God help us.
Congratulations.
Yeah, God help us all if that happens.
Mr. Chair.
I'm moving to Washington. That's it.
Thank you.
It's a usurping of authority. I like the bill. Don't worry.
I'm the speaker, by the way.
You should make an appointment and we'll talk.
Chair Holvey, Representative Evans, as a matter of policy, I cannot take a position on the bill. The commission has not formally adopted a position. I will state again that I'm very pleased with the work that we have done with Northwest Grocers Association. I feel we've made good progress on the bill in terms of making,
close enough. Got your answer. All right.
Easier to administer.
So the second question is this. We could.
Yeah, I think we ought to end this particular panel. Is there any other questions, comments?
He had a second question.
Oh, did you really?
I really did, yes.
Okay, go ahead.
It was actually a constituent question. This was coming up. I got it. And cider. Is adding cider to the list something that is done through the new mechanisms, or is that something that is, like everything else, it might require a piece of legislation?
Chair Holvey, Representative Evans, that would require a change to statute. Currently, distilled spirits, wine, and cider are excluded from the bottle bill.
And the recycling centers?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate your comments, and some of them anyway. And is there anybody else that wanted to speak to House Bill 2805?
2803.
Or 2803, excuse me. I'm dyslexic this morning. So have we a motion on the table on the dash 8?
I don't think.
Let's make that motion.
Chair Holvey, I move the dash 8 amendments to House Bill 2803.
Barton moves the dash 8 amendments to House Bill 2803. We've had our discussion. Is there any other comments, discussion on? Is there any objection to adopting the amendment? Seeing none, the dash 8 amendment is adopted. Representative Barton.
I don't think we have.
Oh, we cannot move this bill. So we'll close the work session on House Bill 2803. And that bill will be carried over to Wednesday, April 15th. Let's take care of that one. That one. It's my intent to. We have a public hearing and that I want to get to now. And we're not going to be hearing House Bill 3480. And after that, I'm probably going to want to discuss the amendments on House Bill 2764. If she left already. She's still here. Okay. So with that, let's open a public hearing on House Bill 3195.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this measure provides that the property owner abutting sidewalk or curb does not have to pay to maintain or repair the sidewalk or curb if the property owner has no direct access to the sidewalk or curb, declares an emergency effective on passage, and there are no amendments before you.
Thank you. And do we have a sign-up sheet on this one?
We do.
So, Virginia Bruce. and Justin. Committee, this particular bill is just a little bit out of our purview, generally, but I think it's relatively.
I'm not quite sure why this got assigned to this committee, but
I'm not sure either. It might have been my fault. I don't know.
It was fine.
But you need to introduce yourself for the record, please.
I'm sorry. I'm very hard of hearing.
Introduce yourself for the record.
I'm Virginia Bruce, resident of unincorporated Washington County.
Would you like to give us your testimony now?
Yes, thank you. I'm sorry, I'm very new at this.
That's okay, don't worry. Yeah, so are
okay,
a lot of people.
I'm the publisher of the Cedar Mill News, which is a little monthly newsletter for our unincorporated community. And like about a quarter of a million people in Washington County, I live in an unincorporated urban area, which means that city laws don't apply. State laws control the sidewalks in our community. Back in the old days, a sidewalk ran in front of your house, and if you had a tree whose roots were disturbing the sidewalk, then you were responsible for fixing it, and that makes sense. Fashions change in land use and road development, and in our urban unincorporated area, many collectors and arterials are built with a median strip, planting strip, travel lanes, another planting strip, sidewalks, another planting strip, and back fences. And the adjacent landowner has no more access to that sidewalk than any of his other neighbors. And in many cases, it's a longer distance for them to travel to get to that sidewalk than it is for other residents of the area. And yet, because state law requires that the adjacent landowner is responsible for sidewalk repairs, if a sidewalk develops a problem, that person who has no access to that sidewalk is still expected to pay for it. This came to my attention a couple of summers ago. We had an extremely hot summer, and the sidewalk buckled. There's a photograph right here of the buckled sidewalk. It turned out to be the contractor's problem, and the county was finally able to get the contractor to pay for it. But not until that sidewalk sat there staying buckled all summer, all year, until December of that year, which meant that people pushing strollers, disabled folks, had to walk in the street, and that's a busy street. The county had been trying to get the adjacent landowner to pay for it, and of course, if I were the adjacent landowner, I wouldn't want to pay for it, and I doubt if any of you would. And so the problem stayed unresolved. We finally put enough pressure on county maintenance that they inquired and investigated and decided they could nail the contractor. But it's a problem that I don't know if any of you have this type of a development in your district where you've got urban unincorporated area where the sidewalks are controlled by state law, basically. Most municipalities have adjusted their responsibilities for sidewalks in these cases. We modeled our bill on Beaverton's law because it makes allowances for cases like this. And we just would like to see the state do the same thing. Again, there's more than a quarter of a million people in Washington County who live in urban unincorporated areas. It would be the second largest city in Oregon if it were incorporated, and it's not going to be, and it's not going to be in our lifetime. There's some kind of unusual circumstances that brought this about. urban areas of Washington County were developed in the 50s and 60s when the cities didn't want to grow. And we developed urban service districts like our clean water services and the schools and the parks and so forth. And so people have no reason to want to annex to cities. They get most of what they need from the service districts in the county. And so nobody's in any hurry to annex themselves to cities to pay more taxes. Now, I know that the Washington County Maintenance Department is not happy about this bill because they're going to have to find the money to repair these sidewalks. And I don't blame them. I spoke to the head of the maintenance department, who said that in principle he agrees with us. He sees that it's not fair, but there's only a finite pot of money to pay for things in the county. Well, we think it's time to have the county start to figure out how they're going to pay for this stuff without soaking the adjacent landowner who has no access to the sidewalk. Any question?
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ma'am, is this property, I understand it's a right-of-way, but do you own to the middle of the street in back of you? In other words, is your property line, because that's the way it is in the city, you go to the front of the property,
right.
The sidewalk's there, the parking strip's there, and then you own usually to the middle of the street, or at least to the street, and then that's why you have to pay for the sidewalk and maintain it. Do you own to the back of that property?
Well, I don't even have a sidewalk. This is not, my ox is not being gored. I'm just concerned that people are being asked to do something unfair. I'm not actually sure. My understanding is that collectors and arterials are owned by the county. I don't believe landowners own out to the middle of the street. But I'm not actually sure. I can't.
For the record, I'm Justin Freeman, legislative assistant to State Representative Mitch Greenlick. Representative Esquivel will be happy to look into that and get back to you.
Follow up. Reason being is because that's the way it's done in the cities, that you own clear out to the street or to the middle of the street, actually. And the maintenance is done by the city to the street, but the sidewalk is under the responsibility of the landowner. Mm-hmm. So I think unless we get these answers, it could be a very interesting bill.
Thank you.
Representative Hurd.
I haven't looked at the bill until now. Would the funding source for these repairs come from the individual landowner, or you're seeking it to come from the county, a common fund of sorts? Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, that's what we're saying, is that sidewalk repairs should be in cases like this, only in cases like this, where the landowner has no practical access to that sidewalk, and where the sidewalk is separated by their back fence and planting and so forth. We recently had a situation in a neighborhood called Oak Hills, and the county had decided to widen a road adjacent to Oak Hills, and to widen that road, they ended up having to buy property, people's backyards, basically. And there was really strong opposition to the road widening and to this whole process. The road did get widened. I can just imagine asking one of those landowners to pay for sidewalk repairs when the county already took half their backyard, and where there's a concrete sound barrier fence between them and the road.
Representative Evans.
Thank you for bringing this bill forward. I have more of a technical question than anything else. When I was a mayor and I worked a lot with the county, we actually do have some folks living out in the county, not as a specific community, but we have something called Buena Vista, which is kind of like what you're talking about. My question, though, is, one, why did the county send you to the state? because the county generally actually has the ability as a local government to implement policies like this. So I guess I'm wondering why Washington County said this needs to be a state fix as opposed to a Washington County Board of Commissioners policy.
State law states that in unincorporated county areas, the landowner's responsible.
Chair Holby,
which means that the county can't make a law contrary to that, as far as I understand.
Yeah, there are existing statutes related to this issue. Additionally, there's a lot of incentive for Washington County to take this issue on because it would require them to use the additional funds.
Okay, I think the second answer makes more sense to me then, that they just don't want to deal with it because
right.
counties can can put into place all kinds of things if they choose to, or especially around transportation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just wanted to clarify. Thank you.
Well, I inquired about that, and I was told that the state law would have to change.
Okay, well, thank you very much, ma'am. I appreciate the issue, certainly.
Kind of pass the buck out.
So, so what actually prevents you from having, tell me again, what prevents you from having access to this sidewalk?
It's from the city.
I mean, because I like Representative Esquivel, believe that usually property lines go right up to the street,
okay.
Or at least up to the sidewalk sometimes. But, so,
as I mentioned, it's the fashion in land use today to develop inward-facing subdivisions.
Well, that's fine, but I mean, right. I'm still, what?
Chair Holby, it's a little bit hard to visualize, but if you picture like an arterial road.
Yeah, I've seen the picture. I know what it looks like.
Okay. So then there'd be like a cul-de-sac, but then there'd be a sound wall here.
Right.
So they would have to walk a half mile to even get to this sidewalk that they're responsible for repairing.
So the developer put up a sound walk. Or a sound wall that's like
in some
concrete
cases it's a sound wall
you
in
can't
most
get
cases,
through
it's a back fence. They'd have to climb their fence to
or
get
put
to
a
the
gate
sidewalk.
In
or put a gate in
pardon
or oh they or put a gate in.
Well, and that's something that probably needs to be looked at. If a guy decides to put a gate in his back fence, does that mean that he's responsible for the sidewalk? That's another thing that, you know, that it's come up and it's a question. So,
well, I guess I'm just saying that generally in my experience, if your property is adjacent to something, they pretty much consider you have access to that for the purpose that it's adjacent. But I don't know for certain.
Well, it is a little hard to visualize, but mm-hmm. You know, they'd have to be climbing 6-8 foot walls to get to the sidewalk, and that's not the practice that most people take.
I have a clarification.
Representative Doherty.
And so maybe just for Justin. So basically there's a sidewalk, there's the sound wall, which is 6 feet high, mm-hmm. and then there's the person's property, but they are responsible for the sidewalk on the other side of
by
the sound wall.
Law. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other comments, questions? Well, thank you. We'll for bringing this to our attention. We're going to take a closer look at it, and we'll contact Representative Greenlick's office and see if we can get a little more information about property lines. Perhaps that may make a difference as well. So. Appreciate you coming down and raising this issue with us.
Well, we appreciate your giving us your attention.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, was there anybody else that wanted to testify on 3195? Nobody from AOC or League of Oregon Cities has no concern about this bill? It's interesting. With that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3195. Let's just clipping right along here.
I think we're done.
I'd like to open up a work session, House Bill 2764. Committee, it's not my intention to work this bill today, but I did want to bring up Mr. Schultz and just talk a little bit about the amendments as much as he can. And
is he here?
Yeah, I probably caught him off guard again this morning.
He didn't leave, though. He just leave.
And did we get a letter from him? And committee, we did receive a letter from MLAC that's in OLIS as well on this particular bill. I know they've been going through a lot of discussions on this bill, and they're still in discussions. And we do have some amendments on the table that we want to discuss just to prepare ourselves. Good morning, Mr. Schultz. House Bill 2764, can you tell us anything about the amendments to this bill? The dash, I think we have the dash one, the three, and the four that I'm aware of.
All on OLIS.
And they're all on OLIS, and at least you could talk to us a little bit about the process at this point.
excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I'm John Schultz, Administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division, which is part of DCBS, and appreciate the opportunity to address the committee. The proposed dash one amendments address a timing concern about the Workers' Compensation Board fee adjustment and provide that the Workers' Compensation Board is only required to review the attorney fee schedules biennially for adjustment. So that's my understanding of the dash ones.
And was it before it was to increase, not to just review, previous to that?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. This changes what the original bill had, which was a direction for an increase, I do believe. And this is just a required review.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Biennially.
Just wanted to clarify that for myself.
On the dash three amendments, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, those amendments state that the Workers' Compensation Board must also consider the fees earned by attorneys who represent insurers and employers when reviewing fee schedules for adjustment. So it broadens the who needs to, excuse me, what the board needs to consider than what the current law requires. They also clarify that a worker's attorney may receive a fee for efforts related to a personal or telephonic interview or a deposition and for efforts defending issues which the insurer or the self-insured employer appealed but did not fully prevail. So a couple of different things. The first part in regard to receiving a fee related to participating in a personal or telephonic interview with a worker, that's part of what attorneys do today, but there's no fee that's provided for that. So this would provide a fee as well as for deposition of the worker. And typically those interviews are early in the claim where the insurance company is trying to establish compensability or if it's not related to the job. And then the second piece, again, that's for efforts where the attorney defends issues where the insurer or self-insured employer actually raised the appeal and the insurer or self-insured employer doesn't fully prevail on all of the issues. So that an example of that might be that there's been a permanent disability benefit provided. The insurer or self-insured employer appeals the amount of that benefit, and the benefit could be lowered, but it's not completely removed. So an example of where an employer may appeal something but does not fully prevail. And I apologize, that's not probably the greatest example on the planet, but it's one that first came to mind. Mm-hmm. I have not reviewed the Dash 4 amendments, so I don't have comments on those. I apologize. I know they hit OLIS, I believe, either last night or this morning. I just haven't had a chance to review those. I did want to mention... Oh, excuse me, I forgot to say something about the Dash 3s. They also delete a provision allowing an award for reasonable attorney fees in a proceeding before a managed care organization. So that was in the original bill to add that provision for an attorney fee. in regard to a proceeding with a managed care organization, and then the Dash 3s took that back, deleted that part. And I think that was due to an agreement between the parties at that point. The Management Labor Advisory Committee, as you mentioned, is in the process of working on this and reviewing this bill, as well as various possible further amendments. You should have a letter from the co-chairs. I think you did mention that you have that, indicating the status of their review. They did not want to be a holdup in any way to the actions that this committee needs to take. And I believe that their commitment, if you need it, is that they would bring any amendments that they would develop on the other side of the legislature. They don't want to be a barrier to moving the bill.
Thank you. Appreciate that review. And yeah, any questions for Mr. Schultz on the Dash 1s and the Dash 3s? Representative Evans.
Not a question, just a comment. I just want to say thank you for the work that's going on, and the letters, much appreciated. I really appreciate you coming forward and sharing where we're at.
Mr. Chair, Representative Evans, you're most welcome.
Thank you. And I haven't really had a chance to actually look at the Dash 4 as much either. And so I don't know if, Ms. Earls, did you want to talk about the Dash 4s at all today, or do you want to wait? It's either your choice. Did anybody else want to speak to the Dash 1s and 3s?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Betsy Earls, representing Associated Oregon Industries. We did, AOI and the Self-Insurance Association did spend a great deal of time with the trial attorneys working through potential agreement areas of the bill. And I think, not to speak for the trial attorneys, I believe that the Dash 3s were kind of where we left it, where they felt that we left it the last time we were able to get together. The Dash 4s are where AOI and the self-insureds felt like we had left it the last time that we were able to get together. We had some scheduling problems, and that's why MLAC took it over. If I could, Mr. Chair, you should see in OLIS a chart that says Betsy Earl's chart. thank you very little. That looks like this, and it just goes through, I think, issue by issue based on the base bill. What areas of agreement we felt like we were getting toward, and areas that remained as disagreement. And if I might, Julie Masters from Safe Corporation came up with me and can talk you through a little bit of the details of the Dash 4s, if that's of interest. we can wait. It's up to you.
Well, we sort of had a description of them. I mean, you can comment on something specific if you want, unless we have specific questions about the Dash 4. Not really seeing any at this point. Would you care to make a comment on the Dash 4 at all? Or?
Sure. For the record, I'm Julie Masters. I'm an appellate attorney with Safe Corporation. And the Dash 4 amendments are the product of quite a bit of discussion between the Oregon self-insureds, AOI, and the trial attorneys with Safe Corporation's support. The Dash 4 amendments provide five new areas for either increased fees for attorneys for injured workers or new areas of fees, such as providing a fee to a worker's attorney who's sits in an interview with a worker whose claim is being investigated by the insurer, which is a requirement that claims be investigated to determine their compensability. If an attorney for the insurer, self-insured employer, is present in the interview. That's one new area of fees. Another new area of fees in the Dash 4 amendments, it doesn't change what was in the original bill to provide an assessed fee when a worker's attorney is successful in increasing a worker's temporary disability. Currently, the law provides a fee out of the worker's compensation, so that change to give the attorney an assessed fee and let the worker keep their entire compensation is of benefit to injured workers. Another area of new fees that are in the Dash 4 amendments, essentially what it does is it dials back a lot of things that were in the original bill, but retains a number of areas of new fees for workers' attorneys. One of the main things it does is deletes the policy changes in Section 1 that don't really have to do with attorney fees, but would kind of change the whole underlying principles of the Workers' Compensation Act. Another thing it does is deletes the emergency cause and the retroactivity clause, which was felt to be causing perhaps some due process concerns to kind of change the rules of the game midstream while you're in litigation. It also maintains but changes the wording of what the board needs to consider in establishing its schedule of attorney fees, that it would consider the contingent nature of the practice of workers' compensation law, which actually is already in the board's rules of what they consider when awarding a fee, but this would put that into statute, and necessity of allowing broadest access to attorneys by injured workers, which is always a good idea, and to give consideration to fees earned by attorneys representing insurers and self-insured employers, but not requiring that there be some kind of parity there because you've really got two very different animals. Are there any questions for me about these?
Thank you. I appreciate your overview of it. Certainly, we're not going to be moving any amendments today because I think we all need a little bit of extra time looking at the comparisons of all that. So, thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony. I see Arthur Towers would. Oh, Representative Kinnear, you have a question?
Well, if you're going to have Art up, that'd be do that, and then I'd just like to make a comment.
Okay, fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Julie.
Good morning. If you could introduce yourself for the record, and so we have the dash ones, threes, and fours under discussion.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Arthur Towers with the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. I just wanted to respond to a few mischaracterizations that were just made regarding some of our conversations and the status of where we are. We've had about 8 hours of negotiations with the insurance industry and management with labor in the room. It's characterized 7 of those hours as pretty positive and productive, and 1 of the hours is pretty counterproductive. But by and large, more good than bad, I would say, in those conversations. Neither the dash ones nor dash threes are, I wouldn't characterize those as anything that's a consensus, nor would I characterize the dash fours in the way that they were just characterized as where the parties have reached any sort of agreement either. So I just want to be very, very clear about that. I think it's also, I really take exception to the concept of the retroactivity. The legislature has a history of enacting changes to the workers' comp system in a way that affects cases already in the pipeline. And that's for good reason, because oftentimes these cases take several years to work themselves through the system. And so we want to be thoughtful about the right way to handle handle the effective date. Retroactivity is the not the right word, I would say. I don't really want to speak in detail on dash fours, but I would want to speak to one nuance of the Well, a couple things. I do want to speak to the MLAC letter, which I think is really positive and constructive. We've now been before MLAC. We're now into double digits in terms of presentations and discussions with the MLAC committee, and that's been very positive, very productive. We're working hard to be patient with their process, and again, I think it's going to be helpful. And so I felt very good about working with them. I do think that it's intriguing to me. One thing that I've learned during this process, being relatively new to workers' compensation issues, is that the committee heard testimony from SAFE in the last, or when this bill was originally heard, February 27th, about their role in the process. And it's interesting to me that their role in the process has evolved to becoming chief spokesperson for management in the negotiations. I find that an unfortunate set of developments. So I feel like we are in making progress on this bill. I feel it's been constructive from many of the parties involved. It's tough conversations, but good. And I will leave it right there. Thank you very much.
Representative Kinnemer, wanted to comment?
If I could, just I think a more general comment about today in particular. We had three bills that dealing with workers' comp that we approved. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to express my appreciation for having delayed those and giving MLAC an opportunity to make their recommendations. And I think that's helpful to the process. And as I said earlier, I think IMLAC has been a good addition to this complicated process of trying to figure out how you update workers' comp law. This one remains the a difficult issue at this point, and I guess a couple of things about that I just wanted to point out is we had some significant transitions in the membership of IMLAC. And it's a very complicated field. It's hard to get up to speed, and it's hard to negotiate things that you're not entirely up to speed about, and it's also hard to negotiate on things that are contentious. And I just want to commend everybody for trying to be calm, and 7 out of 8 hours of productive conversation is commendable. 8 would have been more commendable, but I'm hoping that we can use this, and if we have to, I guess we'll end up making a final decision. But I'm hoping that as further progress, at least IMLAC will have a recommendation to us, and then we ultimately hold the responsibility to make that decision. But I encourage more discussion, and I thank everybody for participating, and I think people are participating in good faith, and I always like it. I think I mention this very often. In my marriage counseling class, I learned all people are basically incompatible, and I just think it's helpful to remember that at these difficult moments, that the only reason we get to consensus or agreement is because we work earnestly and patiently. And I think most of the time that's a better solution, and I'm hoping that's where we can get.
Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Comment, kind of following up on Representative Kinnemer. A sports analogy. Some might recall, those of you who are football fans will recall the NFC Championship a few years ago, right after the big game between the 49ers and the Seahawks, right after that climactic
moment. Who won that game, by the way?
What's that?
Who won that game?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it. But right afterwards, a microphone was put right in Richard Sherman's face.
Yeah.
And
the good team.
He was still very excited. And you know, some perhaps inflammatory remarks were made. And similarly, perhaps with the benefit of hindsight, right either in the middle of a negotiation or immediately after a tough negotiation, 8 hours of it, perhaps inviting the parties up to talk about how it was going or where they were at the moment might not have been the best. Seemed like that just flams. And we can see the body language when the other one's speaking. It's not hard to see, but you're still right in the middle of it. And I want both sides to know that I do not consider their negotiations to be a failure at all. Quite to the contrary, a lot of ground was made, and frankly, I think it's really been a success. Even though you didn't reach consensus right there in 8 hours, both sides have laid a foundation. and I really appreciate MLAC stepping up. This is hard stuff, and just keep at it. We're doing our best, and hopefully we can get there.
Chair Holvey, Representative Barton, thank you for the kind words. I do feel good about the whole thing. I do feel like there's points where there's going to be disagreement, and that's fine. That's very reasonable. That's part of the process, but we're slogging through it. I mean, the big deal here, and the thing to keep in mind, is that what we're fighting over here is whether or not injured workers can get adequate representation and to navigate this really complicated process. And, you know, I think that all sides are working in good faith towards that goal. I'm very worried that the bill, you know, is going to get us partway there, but not all the way there. And so one thing that I'm really happy about is that there's a review process in place so that we can continue this conversation and make sure that this wobbly piece of the workers' compensation system doesn't fall apart and bring the whole thing down with it. And so, again, I commend the people that we're negotiating with and commend the process and commend MLAC. And, you know, we'll get to a good outcome, I think, but know that we aren't quite there yet.
Thank you. Representative Fagan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Also, just a comment, and certainly appreciate the tone of both my colleague, Representative Kennemer, and Representative Barton on this. I just want to make a comment generally. This is really my first experience. I mean, I guess we did some workers' comp bills last time. I just don't remember them being contentious ones. And so, you know, I certainly appreciate MLAC for, you know, what it is and has been. But in my view, at least how I've been lobbied on this issue, I've had a sense that I'm not really able to or allowed to consider something unless it comes out of MLAC with this positive recommendation. And I guess that's a place where I just want to make a comment. When MLAC was formed through the Mahonia Hall agreements, I was in elementary school. And while I appreciate their longevity, and as an advisory committee, and certainly taken into consideration, just like other kind of outside boards that make an advisory opinion, certainly that's part of our consideration. But I do take some issue with the characterization that there's some kind of delegation of authority that I really can't consider or really shouldn't consider a bill unless it comes out of MLAC. Because I think that's an improper delegation of the authority that I've been entrusted with. And so just kind of going forward, you know, like I said, I appreciate and respect the effort and the expertise that is MLAC. But ultimately, I don't appreciate being told by, you know, unelected lobbyists that I have to defer my legislative authority to unelected board, whether I can actually consider that. So that's something, you know, I'm going to consider this bill on its merits. I'm going to consider it if MLAC doesn't come to a recommendation, I will consider that as part of my evaluation. But I am not bound one way or the other by agreements that were made when I was in elementary school. I was elected. I'm accountable to the people, and I will view this bill in that respect moving forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And
Representative Kinnemer,
if I could, just a comment about that. I was here when that MLAC was created, and for good causes, I've said before. I don't know that there was ever any authority delegated to them that supersedes ours. If that was, that certainly was wrong. But I do think it was analogous to the one of our previous bills, the banking bill. Very tedious and technical material, and I think it has proven across the years to be very advantageous to have people who have expertise in this see if they can't come to common ground about it before they get here. And in these intervening 20 some years, they've been remarkably successful in doing that, which I think points to what is probably a really good policy resolution, but ultimately that is our decision. But I think they make recommendations, they don't tell us what to do, and I think that's understood on all sides. And it's ultimately our responsibility to decide what good policy is, but they have the right, I think, to make an informed opinion about it, and I really think what I've seen across the years is they've reduced contention that if we're not careful, we're contending about things that we don't understand fully. and at least some of us are not experts in workers' comp law, and that can be a difficult, if not, I don't know what else, but it can be a difficult task, and I think it's hard to do it well, and our job also is to do it well.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I recognize the process, going forward, and I think Representative Fagan makes a very good point, and she is correct, I believe, from my opinion, that sometimes MLAC cannot come to a consensus, and it has been troublesome when we, as a legislature, see a clear problem that has been growing over the last, 10, 15 years and hasn't been addressed. I think we're compelled to try to address it. And if MLAC is unable to come to a consensus, I think it does leave it with us. I am very encouraged by the co-chairs of MLAC, whom I've met with, and their commitment to continuing to work out a solution to this, but also recognizing that we have an issue before us and a bill before us that does need to be addressed, and it needs to the conversation and the bill both need to keep moving, and so that's the situation we're in, and we have as you know, have given MLAC a considerable amount of time for your discussions, and they have continued, and I think they've produced some good compromises represented in these amendments. And I'm just very encouraged that MLAC's going to continue to work on this, and I have faith that we're going to have a piece of legislation that will pass this session on this issue. So. I'm very positive about where we're at and where we're and the direction we're going. So I do want to thank everybody that's working on this. I know it's a tough issue for everybody concerned, but we do need to remember, the idea is to make sure workers get the benefits that the system is designed for, get them back on the job in the best manner possible, and I think that ultimately is best for everyone concerned. So thank everybody for their attention to this, and thank you for the continued work. We will be carrying this bill over as well to Wednesday as well, so we will just review for a second what bills we are carrying over for a moment so I can thank you very much. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2764. And Jan, we will be carrying over House Bill 2764, House Bill 2803, House Bill 3164. And House Bill 2805?
No, that did move.
We did move that. Okay, great. So we will carry over those bills for right now.
Not
at this point. So with that, I will adjourn the House Business and Labor Committee.
Have a good week.
I can't complain how many times somebody come into the city and say I.